Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Much like the Bills, right? Their MO is defense. And because of that defense that they have, and then you, for the Titans, you mix in the running game, this team is always in football games. And that's how the Bills are. They are always in a football game just because, you know, that defense is just suffocating.
That was ESPN's Teron Davenport. I'm Nate Geary, filling in this week on One Bills Live. Got two more hours of One Bills Live coming at you with more guests and more breakdowns of the 2020 Buffalo Bills schedule. And joining us now on the Wester Hotline is the host and producer over at Fox Sports 910 in Phoenix and the co-host of Locked On Cardinals. This is Alex Clancy. Alex, thanks for joining me, man, especially last minute. I appreciate your making time for us, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So let's hop right into some ball questions here. More importantly, giving us a rundown of, listen, I mean, maybe there isn't two teams who added more dynamic playmakers at the wide receiver position than the Buffalo Bills and the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals drew first blood, though, making that trade just hours before the Bills ended up moving to get Stephon Diggs. So talk a little bit about what an unbelievable trade that no one ever thought would imaginably, you just couldn't fathom a trade being that good being made, but you guys move on from a running back that you more than likely had aspirations to move on from anyways. You've got Kenyon Drake to fill his shoes, who filled in more than admirably last year and really kind of outshined David Johnson. So with that said, like, how stoked are Cardinals fans that you guys probably have, in many arguments, the best receiver in football?
I mean, selfishly, as media members, I feel like we deserve this more than the fans. I mean, the terrible 2018 season was something that was, it was difficult to watch. And then drafting Kyler Murray, things are starting to move forward. And when I saw Adam Schefter's tweet, David Johnson sent to Houston and they're taking on his full salary for a second round pick, I'm like, cool. You know what? It's the medicine you're going to have to eat. It's what Houston did when they sent Brock Osweiler to Cleveland. They had to send a second-round pick for somebody to take on that contract. So I was happy with that. And the fact that the news came out moments after that DeAndre Hopkins was coming back, I screamed an expletive that I can't really divulge right now. It was just – it's something that winning teams do when you have your franchise quarterback on a rookie deal. And that's something that we're not used to in Arizona. It's kind of used to stubbing your toe or being too late to the party in an effort to get a top-tier talent. But the fact that DeAndre Hopkins is now going to be playing outside with Kyler Murray throwing him the rock is an unbelievable thing. And I'm really, really excited to cover it.
The offense as a whole last year, I thought, took a lot of steps in Cliff Kingsbury's first year. But I guess I will be in the camp of people. I don't want to say that I'm surprised by how good Kyler Murray looked in his rookie campaign, but I'm a little surprised. And I think that stems from, this was a guy, for the most part, that most of us thought was going to play baseball. And it really wasn't until the Heisman Trophy came into play and a national champion. All of these things kind of started coming into play very late in the season, and then he just ends up going into the NFL draft. He's picked number one overall, and now he's what I think most of us would consider a franchise quarterback. So with that being said, how impressed, I guess maybe the question is, who are you more impressed with? Is it Kyler Murray or is it Cliff Kingsbury? And maybe you can give me a little mix of both and how they're working together to become a more, I think, dynamic offense.
Yeah, the answer plainly is Kyler Murray, and I'll explain why in a second. When I was there week one, I was in the press box, And the first half went by, and the Detroit Lions were punishing the Cardinals. I thought this was going to be 2018 all over again. I thought Nick Bosa was the right choice at one. He was obviously the safer pick, and, you know, he went on to the Super Bowl with San Francisco. When the second half started and the Cardinals came out, they're like, okay, we're going to find out right now if this could potentially work at the NFL level. And the fact that Kyler Murray brought them, I think they were down 3 scores with under 2 minutes to go in the third, something like that. The fact that he brought them all the way back, there was an electricity in that stadium and in the press box, to be candid, that we haven't seen in a long time. And that's the moment I knew this kid's here to stay. And it wasn't like, oh, it's not, you know, too quick or anything. You know, you watch enough sports to be like, that kid's got it.
It reminded me of Cam Newton's first start in Arizona, funny enough. Like that it reminded me of that. I mean, it wasn't 500 yards, but I think it was a similar type stamp of, hey, I'm an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, and the interesting part about that comparison is their body types, although completely on the opposite sides of the spectrum, but people weren't sure if they would work it from the quarterback position, because we really haven't seen, you know, Cam Newton's body type, it's like LeBron James. You don't really see it every day. And then Kyler Murray, although the comparisons to Russell Wilson are bountiful, Russell Wilson's a completely different specimen, even though they're the same height. So he's kind of in his own niche. And, yeah, I mean, his arm talent will carry Cliff Kingsbury to wherever heights Kyler Murray goes. It's like the opposite of Sean McVay and Jared Goff, where Jared Goff is only as good as Sean McVay. Cliff Kingsbury is only as good as Kyler Murray is going to take him.
Having said that, and especially, and this maybe brings Steve Keim into the conversation as well, but it's not easy taking a quarterback, therefore trading up for a quarterback the year prior, and then getting the number one pick and selecting another quarterback. That's not easy to do, and considering they got a second round pick for their troubles. Looking back, how monumental of a shift will that be when you look back at Steve Keim's career? Because let's face it, many of us from the outside looking in were wondering why Steve Keim was getting another opportunity to hire another football coach and draft another quarterback. And I think most teams are, and by most, I think probably like 95% of other teams are not letting Steve Keim do what he did after failing. And I guess when you look back, like, what is going to be the defining moment of this organization? Is it going to be allowing Steve Keim to make one final swing at this? And ultimately, it looks like after year one, like it could be a home run.
Yeah, he swung for the fences on a 3-0 count with bases loaded, you know, in a tie ball game with drafting Kyler Murray. And that was the scary part. That when it comes down to it, that was I saw that as a selfish pick. This will either save my job or I will be working as a janitor somewhere. And it's worked out. The defining moment was since the end of the 2018 season, the debacle of a Steve Wilkes, Josh Rosen season, to now, Steve Keim's a top 10 GM in the NFL. Over the last 2 seasons specifically, with the moves he's made, with the draft choices he's made, with things that have worked out, there are a lot of question marks. And the one thing that I will give him the benefit of the doubt for, where most others won't, and listen, I've ripped Steve Keim, and it's fun because he's an easy target. But I am under the impression that he did not want to draft Josh Rosen. I'm under the impression that nobody expected any of the top 4 quarterbacks that year, and obviously not counting Lamar Jackson at that point, to be available at 10. To save his job, he had to jump up and draft Josh Rosen and just say, you know what, I'm trying. I'm trying for the future. And I don't believe that he really wanted to draft him at that spot. He just was kind of forced to because they were only a couple picks behind.
Alex Clancy here on the Wester Hotline. He is the host at Locked On Cardinals and the Locked On Podcast Network. Alex, I kind of want to move to the defensive side of the ball because I think there are interesting storylines on that side of the ball, considering they, other than Chandler Jones, they've been a defense, and Patrick Peterson, of course, they've been a defense that have been pretty underwhelming the last few years. They go out and they pay Jordan Phillips, and if you're a Bills fan, you know, a lot of Bills fans wanted Jordan Phillips to get re-signed and stay around after having a career year last year and really having a resurgence to his career after being cut by the Dolphins and brought in here. But again, that was for, you know, chump change for $1 million, $2 million here. He's now going to be expected, and in my opinion, he's going to be required to play slightly out of position in the Arizona defense, and he's going to do so at a $30 million clip. Your thoughts on the Jordan Phillips signing, what the expectations are for him in this defense heading into the season?
This is going to be the pivotal year for the defense specifically, because the best friend of a young quarterback is a wide receiver and a defense. And all the things Steve Keim has done, including bringing in Jordan Phillips to shore up the interior of the defensive line in the 3-4, the draft, which will help Jordan Phillips because Leki Fotu out of Utah and Rashad Lawrence out of LSU will be carrying the load as well with Jordan Phillips. So, I mean, he's going to have some backup there, even though it's going to be some young guys. This defense has the potential to be a top 10 defense. Do I think they're going to get there with Vance Joseph at the helm? Probably not. But I remind people, Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, was almost out on the street until he actually got some talent, and now he's looked at for head coaching positions around the NFL. So when you have talent like you do with Patrick Peterson, Jordan Hicks in the middle, Jordan Phillips, and then, you know, Chandler Jones, who's arguably the best edge rusher or defensive end in the game sacks-wise. He's had the most sacks in the NFL since he came into the league just quietly. They have a capability to be great. And the one thing that will be the deciding factor for the future of this defense, and I've been harping on this for 3 years now, is Patrick Peterson's contract is up at the end of the year. If he wants to take a team-friendly deal, 2 year, 35 mil, 28 guaranteed, something like that, this team could potentially move towards the upper echelon of teams in the NFL. If he wants to get a 4 year, 50 mil with 40 guaranteed over the age of 30, if he is that so egomaniacal and the Cardinals pay him because they're used to paying guys over what they're worth, then that could jettison this whole defense. But as it stands right now, they're young. They've got a good scheme in place, and they have some leaders on that side that can make some noise in the NFC.
You know, the other thing I look at, too, is obviously we're talking about with the addition of Jordan Phillips, and I think that's definitely an important addition to this defense, adding to the defensive line next to Chandler Jones. But Isaiah Simmons might really be the guy that you mentioned how, you know, getting more talent around Vance Joseph in that defense. Well, Isaiah Simmons is easily one of the most interesting players in that draft last year, or this year, I should say. What about Isaiah Simmons' game excites you the most, and what are you expecting of him? Because they recently drafted a guy in Hassan Reddick, who they sort of touted as this guy that could play multiple positions. Is he going to play linebacker? Is he going to rush the passer? Is he going to have his hand in the ground? Is he going to be up? And then he just really has yet to found that niche for himself in the NFL, and they drafted him rather high. So with the 8th overall pick this year, they go for a versatility-type player, but these are two very different athletes with Reddick and Simmons, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Hassan Reddick, I am still under the impression that if Bruce Arians never coached at Temple, Hassan Reddick would not have been an Arizona Cardinal. I mean, it was that Philly connection. And I really think that it was a swing and a miss, and that was just a long lineage of kind of misses in the first round. Isaiah Simmons, another guy who dropped way lower than – he was looked at with the – when the Giants took Andrew Thomas out of Georgia at 4, everything changed.
Yep.
Because that was the guy – apparently he was on the top of the Arizona Cardinals list, and nobody knew that. Nobody – there were a bunch of offensive linemen the Cardinals could have taken – but when Isaiah Simmons goes past the Chargers at 6, with you could have paired him and Derwin James together for that defense with Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. I never understood why they passed on him. But when he dropped to 8, you have to take him. It doesn't matter. You throw the book out. This guy could be, and this is what we're looking at, just like with Kyler Murray, he could be a transcendent talent. And you could be looking at two of the most electric and fun players to watch on either side of the ball in Kyler Murray and Isaiah Simmons for the next decade. And what do guys like that yield? Other talented guys wanted to come play for the Cardinals. And that's something that you need to completely supersede the stigma of the Arizona Cardinals franchise over the last 50 or 60 years and have young infusion of talent to just completely trump, completely overhaul the just stigma that the Cardinals have had with their franchise. And I think those two guys, he can play anywhere. And they're going to say that he's probably going to line up at linebacker to begin with. But, you know, injury, but if he plays safety, if he's a rover, who the hell knows? He's wearing an Arizona Cardinals jersey, and that's really all that matters.
You know, you bring up an interesting point there, too, and you kind of go back to some of these Steve Keim drafts. And since 2013, when he's taken over in the first round, Jonathan Cooper, Deion Buchanan, DJ Humphries, Robert Kimdichie, Hassan Reddick, Josh Rosen. That is going up from 2013 to 2018. The fact that he got two more hacks at it is pretty remarkable in itself. But you know what? Like, I think, you know, the Bills and the Cardinals are very similar in the format you were just laying out. Like, the Cardinals desperately needed infusion of young talent to attract other veteran players of let's just put it, of significance, guys that can move the needle for your football team. The Bills are in a very similar situation themselves, and I think Josh Allen and Kyler Murray are sort of in that same breath of they are going to be the reason that other players come play in either Buffalo or Arizona, two cities that just aren't really thought of as like, hey, yeah, this is where we want to go. You're thinking of destinations. If you're a free agent, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to listen to Miami's pitch regardless of how good Miami is because it's Miami, right? Or Denver or L.A., like some of these cities that you're just going to listen to a pitch from a team because of the city that they're in. And I think players now are moving away from that ideology and more into, I want to be in a winning program with a coach who likes his players and gets along with his players. And I think you're talking about Sean McDermott and the Bills and Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals as maybe like two teams like right now that you're looking at that are sort of carrying the torch in that conversation, no?
Yeah, I mean, Sean McDermott, I wish the Cardinals had the stability Sean McDermott brings to a franchise. I mean, that's something that nobody really knew when they brought him in, kind of a no-name guy, you know, respected around the league, obviously. But his success there, especially with Josh Allen still, I mean, from the other coast, still being, in my opinion, really raw. Like, he's like a puppy that doesn't know his own strength yet. He doesn't know how to hone it in yet. He'll get there. I mean, he's shown, he's taken leaps in the playoffs and everything. I mean, he's matured. I didn't think the fact that you don't make the all-conference team in the Mountain West Conference your last year in college and then come out and become an NFL quarterback blew my mind.
Yeah.
His numbers were awful in college. And the fact that he was able to come in and really infuse the run game and his, I mean, his ability to throw the ball down the field obviously is almost unmatched in the league. He just needs to hone it in. The fact that Sean McDermott is the head coach there, It's so much easier to have just competency in the front office and the head coach, and that's a huge stark contrast between the Bills and the Cardinals and the fan base. I'll tell you what, Bills Mafia is
something else.
Something that I wish the Cardinals had.
You say that now. They are a rowdy bunch, a proud bunch, and like you and like many Cardinals fans have just experienced decade after decade after decade of bludgeons to the back of the head, it feels like. And, you know, I'm happy, and I just kind of tweeted it out because I recognize a theme. You know, I mean, I host every Saturday, and every guest I bring on, there seems to be a theme over the last, you know, month, 2 months, even maybe even more than that. There seems to be this level of respect for Sean McDermott, and even Brandon Bean gets lumped into there as well, the general manager. There's this respect around the league amongst media members for Sean McDermott that is really a breath of fresh air because, I mean, this is a team that has had the Doug Marones and Rex Ryans, who are guys that are kind of not necessarily respected and or could be even talked about as laughingstocks, right? And it is a really nice breath of fresh air to have people come on this show and other shows that I host and say, hey, Nate, like, you know, you got to go to Teron Davenport of ESPN. Was just on before you said literally the exact same thing. Like, Sean McDermott is one of those good, good, good coaches. And that's a breath of fresh air. And I know it probably is a breath of fresh air for you, too, in Arizona.
Yeah, you know, Cliff Kingsbury has kind of – he was quoted as saying he thought he was going to get fired at halftime of week one, because it was this roller coaster of what am I doing here? Nothing was working. Preseason didn't work, you know, the whole thing. And he's really taken a turn. You know, he's just been stable. He kind of got made fun of a little bit because, oh, we're looking at Sean McVay wannabe. oh, no winning in college, you know, blah, blah, blah. Took the USC OC job because nobody in their right mind would ever offer a head coaching job in the NFL. Like, all the dude has been is consistent. Press conferences, just he's a soft-spoken dude. He may repeat a lot of stuff, but that'll come with time. You know, his actual acumen when it comes to interviews and everything. But the dude's cool, and he works really hard, and stability's coming. You know, and it's again, the coattails riding of Kyler Murray is where Cliff Kingsbury is going to find stability, because Kyler Murray, tell your friends, is as advertised. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, with Murray, the thing that maybe intrigues me the most is I don't really think we've even seen him reach his potential as an athlete/runner. And that's the thing that Josh Allen has sort of helped him bridge the gap of being like a developmental passer. Let's put it this way. When you look at Kyler Murray and you look at Josh Allen, one came out of the package as an NFL passer. The other one has a lot of work to do and still does. But he was able to sort of bridge that gap with his running ability. And I don't even think we've fully seen like the extent of how, you know, how effective Murray can be with his feet.
Yeah. I mean, well, you look at, so say there's some crazy stat that Lamar Jackson, the amount of times he's been hit in the first 2 years is shattering the record book. Kyler Murray probably could have run for 500 more yards last year. I mean, what he knows is what his size is and how big linebackers are and how big safeties are that could take his head off. So Kyler Murray's running ability is very, very calculated. He runs the first down, he goes down. He runs the first down, he LaDainian Tomlinson's it, and runs right out of bounds. Like, he's not going for the extra 2 or 3 yards. And that's something that, even though Cardinals fans are worried when he leaves the line of scrimmage, he is so smart, he's so aware of his surroundings. He didn't get his head ripped off at all last year. He led the NFL. He was sacked more than anybody in the NFL. None of them were violent hits. He always knows where he is. And That's the one thing. Like you mentioned Josh Allen, that arm strength is something that if you find somebody to hone it in, he could be a top 10 quarterback in the league. Kyler Murray, he played base, it's just different. Like, yeah, he's a compact guy. He may have as strong of an arm as Josh Allen, but Josh Allen's hucking it ability is almost unmatched in the league with him and Patrick Mahomes. So they're completely different guys. But yes, the running ability of Kyler Murray, I don't think we've seen the end of it, but I think that there is a cap that is much lower than what Josh Allen's is just by his sheer size. He can run over cornerbacks. It's completely different.
All right, my friend. Alex, I really appreciate you hopping on and talking some cards with us. Tell the folks where they can find your work.
You follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Clancy's Corner. I'm the producer / fill-in host for The Drive on Fox Sports 910 Phoenix, 6 to 10 a.m. Pacific time, and the host of Locked On Cardinals. Just Google Locked On Arizona Cardinals. You can find it anywhere.
Awesome, man. Alex Clancy there on the Western Hotline. We really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, all right. Quick timeout. When we come back, Curtis Crabtree covers the Seahawks and is a stringer for the AP. So we'll talk to him coming up next here on WGR.
Back to Sean McDermott is the head coach there. It's so much easier. It's so much easier to have just competency in the front office and the head coach, and that's a huge stark contrast between the Bills and the Cardinals.
That was my guest last half hour. That was Alex Clancy of Locked On Cardinals. I'm Nate Geary and Corey behind the board here this week, and we're filling in for One Bills Live, breaking down the Bills' 2020 opponents all week long, prepping you for the 2020 season, which is like literally around the corner, weeks away from starting. Fingers crossed. So let's go back to the Western Hotline now as Curtis Crabtree. He covers the Seattle Seahawks and is a contributor over at ProFootballTalk.com. Curtis, thank you so much for making some time for us and joining us talk a little Seattle Seahawks with us.
No problem. How's it going, guys?
Awesome, man. Can't complain. The sun is shining. I can see through your Twitter that you're a big golfer. I am myself a big golfer, so I'll be getting out this evening myself. So it's all looking up from here.
Oh, very nice. I played a couple times here this weekend, so I got my fix in until next weekend rolls around. So I'm right there with you.
Heard that, my friend. Well, let's talk a little Seahawks. And actually, I think this is a good place to start because at least with what the Bills were able to do this offseason to make some additions across their defensive line, they lose Jordan Phillips and Shaq Lawson, but they bring in Quentin Jefferson, and I think you're a great person to tell us a little bit about what Bills fans might be able to expect from their free agent defensive end slash defensive tackle slash kind of he's going to play all over the defensive line for the Bills.
Yeah, Quentin really kind of put it together last year where, you know, they needed him to be a little bit more, and he was able to kind of to rise to the occasion and become a really solid piece for them. He was originally a fifth-round pick out of Maryland 4 years ago, bounced really quickly down to the Rams and back, and took a while to kind of find his footing with injuries and stuff early in his tenure here. But he's basically just your bigger style defensive end that can kick down inside the defensive tackle at times if you need him to. He's not going to be a big sack guy or anything like that, but he'll be solid against the run and just a guy who can kind of do a lot of things pretty well. So, you know, he's not going to be flashy, but he's a solid player and a nice piece to have particularly as a rotational option if he can be a part of that mix. So I think that's what you're going to look to expect from Quentin Jefferson.
Awesome. That was one of the more interesting signings this offseason. And the Bills added a whole bunch across, sort of depth signings across. Vernon Butler's another guy, and obviously Mario Addison from the Carolina Panthers. But sticking with the defensive side of the ball, Jadeveon Clowney obviously still available.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Available on the free agent market. Seattle closed the door on that whole situation, or is there still a thought that, you know, he might, as the market clearly is bearing out, may come back and settle for another one-year deal of sorts?
Yeah, I don't think they've closed the door on it, but certainly they moved on to other options. When I think it was early in April when they went and signed Benson Mayoa to bring him in, that was kind of the point where they're like, look, we can't wait any longer. Like, we have to go finish our offseason and push forward. And Clowney obviously did not get the market he was expecting, I think, for a number of reasons, from the fact that, you know, as we were talking about defensive ends, the one stat defensive ends are measured on is sacks, and he typically doesn't get them. He's never been a double-digit sack guy. That doesn't mean he's not impactful, because he certainly is, but he doesn't get the stat that most defensive ends are judged by. Additionally, he's had another injury, you know, a core muscle surgery that required surgery at the end of last season. And with COVID going on, no teams could bring him in to look at him themselves.
Right.
So, you know, all of these things kind of factored together to where he hasn't had much of a look, similar to where Cam Newton actually ended up here with, where teams just weren't able to look at him. And I think that's kind of why he ended up in limbo. But the Seahawks don't have a ton of cap space any longer. They could certainly rework some stuff if they wanted to bring him in. Their pass rush certainly isn't solved just by adding a couple draft picks to the mix and Benson Mayoa and Bruce Irvin. So I would still think that that's a concern for them. But and just in general, I don't think there's a ton of teams still out there looking at Clowney. It's probably Seattle, Tennessee, and that's, you know, about it. So I still think there's a possibility he comes back to Seattle. It just hasn't happened yet.
What about Josh Gordon? There's another interesting name for you. And I know they've been sort of not that they've been talked about, but I wonder if the Seattle Seahawks are in the neighborhood or in the range to potentially go and maybe bring back Josh Gordon if he's reinstated, or are the Seahawks a team that could potentially be in on Antonio Brown? Like, it just seems like they're a team that wants to add another wide receiver to a pretty impressive group of Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf as your 1-2. It seems like, though, they would like to add a veteran of sorts. Talk to me a little bit about what you think they might do, or if there's an addition maybe waiting out in the wind somewhere that they may add before training camp starts.
Yeah, I don't know how realistic the Antonio Brown aspect of it would be, just because his last year was so odd to try to figure out where he's at now legally, as well as with the league and all of that, is, you know, kind of a tough one to pin down. But I think if Josh Gordon gets reinstated, I could easily see him ending up being back here. I know the Seahawks were a big fan of him when he came in. Josh spoke really highly about the Seattle area. It was an area he was actually somewhat familiar with when he came out here. He was hoping to come to Seattle, and in the little bit of time he was here, he did start to find his footing and produce with them before, you know, I think his brother passed away, and I think that's kind of what led to some of his issues that led to him getting suspended again last year. Now, the one caveat there is it wasn't just the substance abuse thing. It was also a PED suspension. So that factors in a little bit differently than some of the past transgressions that he had in that regard. But I think if Gordon was able to be reinstated, that Seattle would certainly be an option for him. I know Russell Wilson is trying to, you know, grease the gears a little bit, continually about trying to get some more weapons in to help him. And so I think that's kind of where the Antonio Brown infatuation comes from. And certainly, you know, his market value is not what it once was, despite being, you know, potentially, you know, arguably the best receiver in the league there for a while. So would I rule it out? No, but I think it's kind of tough to figure out where his circumstance is right now.
So I'll ask you this, Curtis, because every year I flip the draft on and I'll watch it and I host a show to react to all the draft picks all the way through to day three. And every year, the last 3 or 4 years that I've been doing this, I'm, you know, got ESPN in the background playing and the Seattle Seahawks make a pick and everyone's like, huh? Who did the Seahawks pick? Like, what are they doing? Like, that's sort of like the pretty common response you hear. And this year, Jordan Brooks is the player that I feel like we all kind of got that response from. Talk a little bit about Jordan Brooks, and also talk a little bit about how the Seahawks have been drafting. I mean, there's this consensus opinion from the outside looking in that they're not very good at it.
Well, at least when it came to the first round picks, I understand that thought process for sure. It doesn't help that also he wasn't a first rounder, but their top pick, 3 years ago, Malik McDowell never played a down, never even had a practice in training camp with the team because he gets into an ATV accident before training camp and never has his career come together because of everything that kind of materialized out of that. But when it comes to Jordan Brooks, I think it does make sense if you dive into it a little bit deeper. It certainly caught us by surprise on draft night too, so that's certainly to form for them when it comes to their first round picks. But we keep hearing about Jordan Brooks is that there's a lot of similarities to Bobby Wagner. At least that's what they see there. His coach at Texas Tech was also a coach at Utah State when Bobby Wagner was there. So there's, you know, some of the talk is that there's some similar traits between the two of them. And right after the draft, we also found out that K.J. Wright had an additional surgery this offseason. He's expected to bounce back from and be okay and all of that. But still, all three of Seattle's starting linebackers at this point, Bruce Irvin, Bobby Wagner, K.J. Wright, all of them have been in the league since at least 2012 or earlier, between all three of those guys. And they're all on the wrong side of 30 when the season gets started. So, you know, in a moving towards the future standpoint where K.J. Wright could easily not be here beyond this year, Bruce Irvin could easily not be here beyond this year, that Jordan Brooks could be a big factor into their future there. So I think it wasn't necessarily their biggest need for right now, but they needed depth at linebacker. He can provide a future at linebacker for them. And so I think in that regard, it does make sense that if he is the type of player they foresee him as being, that there is some sense in him being that selection.
Well, you know, I was talking about draft picks. I mean, let's look back at that 2018 draft. Rashad Penny, the running back out of San Diego State, him and Chris Carson last year. You know, I will say this about Penny, though, is it seemed last year before the injury that Penny had started taking strides and started taking some carries away from Carson. Where does that running back room currently sit? And I guess I don't want to make it sound mean or anything, but does whoever's playing running back matter when you have such a great quarterback like Russell Wilson?
Well, I think it matters to an extent, because if you look back a couple years ago, Seattle's running game went into the was an absolute disaster. I think they had 11 or 12 different running backs carry the ball throughout the season. When Thomas Rawls had his really big year, I think it was in 2016, and then 2017 was the disaster season where they went through C.J. Spiller and Terrence McGee and brought back Kristen Michael, and C.J. Procise was hurt, and it was just a string of these different running backs coming through where they just never found any real consistency with it. And Russell had to be everything for the team, where he literally accounted for all, but they had one rushing touchdown all season, and it came from a J.D. McKissick run from 30 yards out. So every time they got near the goal line, they couldn't run the ball into the end zone. So I do think running backs do matter to an extent in that regard, and Carson is very good when it gets down near the goal line. But the issue right now is that, as you mentioned with Rashad Penny, he's coming off an ACL tear, and the Seahawks don't really expect him to be ready for the start of the season, so he's likely heading to the PUP list for the first half of the year. And, you know, so now you add Carlos Hyde into the mix as a free agent signing, who had 1,000 yards last year in Houston. He's going to be a part of that mix. Two former University of Miami running backs, and Travis Homer and DJ Dallas, have been selections over the last two seasons here. How they factor in is going to be up in the air. But the other question there is that Seattle's line could have as many as four new offensive starters. Up front, five, if you want to include the jumbo tight end role Seattle uses so heavily as well, with George Fant moving on to the New York Jets. So in a season where they haven't been able to be together at all, they're basically completely turning over their offensive line, and that could be an adventure in its own right too. So all of that is going to be difficult to kind of project and figure out how it's going to come together. They are going to need Russell Wilson to be everything he is to kind of carry them, for sure.
George Fant, I'm glad you brought that up. I would like... A lot of people have compared the New York Jets offseason to the 2019 offseason of the Buffalo Bills, where the Bills added just a ton of, I guess we'll call them like sort of replacement-level names, but they got tons of value out of across the offensive line and guys that end up being really good starters for them. Having said that, do you get the sense that George Fant, moving on to New York, who's likely going to be asked to play a starting role, do you think that's something he's prepared to do in New York? And do you think Seattle's going to miss that swing tackle role? And do they have somebody there to sort of pick up the slack there?
Well, I'll focus on Seattle real quick first. I believe that Cedric Ablehi, the former Bengals draft pick, will be the guy that they'll pencil in at that spot now. Brandon Shell, the former Jet, is going to likely be their right tackle. And then Ablehi comes in from Jacksonville and will probably be the guy they kind of deputize to be the Fant jumbo tight end role now this year. But as far as Fant going to the Giants, to the Jets, he wanted a chance to start. He thinks he's capable of being a left tackle in the NFL. He's had experience starting there. He did it as a rookie when he'd never played college football and had to start about 10 games in his rookie season, and actually came along pretty decently that year. You know, he was a college basketball player at Western Kentucky. He's a very good athlete. You've seen him run a couple pass patterns throughout the years here with Seattle as well. You know, so he's developed pretty well throughout his career. Whether he can be the full-time left tackle and really play at a high level, I don't think we know that for sure yet. I think given the fact that he's now 4 years into his football life and has a chance to kind of understand what's going on now and learn from Dwayne Brown over the last few years and all that, I think he's in a position to have a real good chance to take advantage of the opportunity he gets. So whether he's going to be a plus tackle, I know the Seahawks were always really high on him, and it just got to the point where when he was hurt, they ended up trading for Dwayne Brown, and then that opportunity for him to be the left tackle starter kind of went out the door. So I think he's got a chance to be a solid player out there for them.
All right, Curtis, before I let you go, I'm going to really make you earn this one, okay?
Okay.
This division is, I would say it's as close to historically great as any division of four teams that I can remember. And I know the AFC West is really good. I just, it's hard for me to look at this NFC division and say that the, of all four teams, it's, it could be a coin flip. And with the extra playoff team too, I think that's going to end up looming large for this division. Does this division have two or three playoff teams in it?
I think it's got a chance to have three. You know, I think Arizona's going to be feisty as well with Kyler Murray in his second year. The team that I'm not particularly high on is the Rams, just because I think they got themselves into such financial trouble chasing all the stars that they did to make their Super Bowl run that I think they're going to be hurting coming out of that year. But, you know, the 49ers obviously coming off a Super Bowl appearance. The Seahawks are always finding ways to be competitive and make it to the playoffs. And, you know, they had a chance to get to an NFC Championship game again last season against Green Bay and just fell short of that. Russell Wilson has become a very, you know, top-tier quarterback in the NFL. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, as you mentioned earlier, are some terrific targets for him. Greg Olson's addition will be interesting to watch. So I think, you know, between those three teams in particular, the Niners, Seahawks, and Cardinals, I think that's going to be, you know, a slugfest. And the Rams aren't bad by any stretch. I just think they're kind of going to end up with the short straw out of the division. So it's going to be a slugfest for sure for this division and which teams find their way into the postseason.
All right, Curtis, first and foremost, thank you so much for making some time and coming on and talking some ball with us. We do really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy some solid time alone and to yourself before the football season starts. And then, you know, it's going to be crazy and hectic, and you definitely won't have as much golf time. So enjoy it, man, and thanks again for making some time for us here.
Oh, no problem. I've already kind of lost that extra time because baseball season's supposedly starting with the Mariners here on Friday. So
supposedly.
I'm going to dive into that, too.
Supposedly. I'm seeing a lot of reports. A lot of players are very skeptical. We already saw Ian Desmond of Colorado already say he's not coming back to play. So we'll see how it ends up working out, but that's right, baseball. So enjoy that, man, and thanks again for making time for us.
Sounds good, guys.
Awesome. Curtis Crabtree there. He covers the Seahawks, Mariners, and Washington Huskies for Sports Radio KJR in Washington, and is also a contributor over at ProFootballTalk.com. Quick timeout. Preview in Hour 3, because that's coming up next here on WGR. All right, welcome back. Nate Geary here. Been a locked and loaded, packed, jam-packed 2 hours, thanks to Curtis Crabtree, last half hour, joining us talking Seahawks. Talking more football coming up next, our 2 p.m. guest, and 2:30. We've got Benjamin Albright coming up at 2:30. We've got Tim Benz coming up next, talk some Steelers. So that's all coming up next, this next hour, and if you missed any of the first 2 hours, of course, you can go to WGR550.com. Corey's got it up. On-demand audio there. Brayton also just put up a story. The minor league season has just been canceled. Major League Baseball making that announcement just moments ago, so you can check that out at WGR550.com. Corey will have that in his update as well. So quick time out of the side. Tim Benz, Benjamin Albright, coming at you next on WGR.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.